warn you, people. We are watching this situation in New York now, developing. This happened in the Tribeca neighborhood in New York, where there is in Lower Manhattan, where obviously the streets are always filled. And we're watching carefully here what actually transpired. Appears to have been a rental truck that ran up into pedestrians. The driver, again, as we're just putting this together, driver got out of the truck. Shots were exchanged with police. Police say that he is in custody. You know, that we've learned now that that can sometimes mean, you know, was struck and in custody, or, you know, struck, been neutralized, or they use all kinds of different terms here. Mm-hmm. It appears to be a like a Home Depot rental pickup truck.
It does. It's got the $19 an hour sticker on the side of the truck, indicating it is a rental truck.
Right.
And Judy's news just now indicating that they're suspecting potentially terrorism in this case is a new development. He drove down the bike path, injuring several cyclists, hitting several people, and then started shooting people. One of the eyewitnesses said at least 4 to 6 shots were fired. New York local news is reporting several people struck by those bullets.
And as we now see, we've seen this throughout Europe, and now we're seeing it here in the United States. This does seem to be the modus operandi of terrorists, because it's a quick way to be able to make a splash, create a mass casualty incident, and with little or no expense, right? You don't have to find bomb-making material. You don't have to, work on, getting on board an aircraft or anything like that. Not to say that those kinds of spectaculars, as they call them, aren't still things that we have to be concerned about. But in a situation like this, these are, unfortunately, as seen in the terrorism world, cheap and easy substitutions for things like that that can be deadly and disruptive, which is really what they're trying to do.
And they're one of the hardest things, as police have said many times, to defend against. If they act as a lone wolf, if they act alone, and they do something like this, even though there did seem to be some sort of exchange with police of gunfire there, it was after the fact, of course. And now, who is this person? We don't know yet. I think that'll be interesting to see.
And this does appear to have happened about 45 minutes ago. Again, in the Tribeca neighborhood in New York, Lower Manhattan, the car then struck. It went apparently, or the truck in this case, it was a pickup truck, went up over a barrier, and then got onto this bike path and just started trying to mow people down on the bike path as they were both biking and walking and running on that bike path.
So sad. Said a very popular bike path, even at this time of the day, as most things are in New York, and no surprise that he struck several bikers in the course of doing what he did.
We will continue to watch this situation as it develops. It's a little unclear at this point, other than New York Police Department saying that there is the they do believe that it's terrorist related. This is an act of political terror in some way, shape, or form. So we will find out more details as they become available. The situation is now completed, though. I mean, this is not an ongoing terrorist act. It is it's now obviously with the gunman, at least in this particular case, the driver/gunman, in custody, as it's being said. And you're starting to see pictures emerging now of the bikes, mangled bikes on this bike path.
Yeah, the destruction this one truck caused is really, well, it's shocking. You see different cars that are banged up, and then you see the bike path and the people there who clearly have been struck, and bikes on the sides of the road, or this bike path, in fact, where, you know, after this truck just plowed through there at about like 3:15 this afternoon.
Right. And
troubling stuff.
And once again, they're saying one suspect in custody. It appears to be now sources are saying, this is, I want to just check my sources here.
Mm-hmm. This crushed is into a school bus, I should mention as well.
CNN says as many now as 6 dead in what is a deliberate act in New York, an act of terror, according to New York Police Department. And again, it's a situation where a pickup truck got up onto a sidewalk and then onto a bike path. mowed people down, and then the driver got out and started shooting at people. Subsequently engaged by police, police returned fire, and they say the suspect is in custody. That's a direct quote.
And then we were hearing they were approaching the vehicle with caution, suspecting that potentially there were explosives in there, but that they do think that there's no immediate threat to the area, and they'll try to figure out who this guy is and what this is linked to potentially.
And in situations like this, all the major cities go into some form of reaction, to make sure that this isn't a multiphasic attack. Obviously, they're going to be looking at that throughout Manhattan, but they also look at it even in cities like Chicago. When things like this happen in major cities, you want to make sure that this isn't some sort of an organized attempt to make some sort of a political statement by doing similar kinds of acts in other places. So if you're going to start noticing things in downtown Chicago, as security is going to be heightened at airports and places like that, also around the country. Violetta Pondermatic's got the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
Play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com and check it out today.
Well, Gonzo with Anna DeBlanches right here, 720 WGN. Watching the situation as it's unfolding in New York City.
Yeah.
Lower Manhattan. In the Tribeca neighborhood, there was a vehicle that apparently went up onto a bike path, mowing down a number of people. They're saying as many as 6 people now dead and many more injured in this incident. And then the driver of this vehicle was able to get out of the vehicle and then start to shoot at people. It's unclear he had a long gun or a handgun. We're not quite sure yet.
Right.
And was engaged by police, and police say the situation is over. And this appears to have happened on the lower west side of Manhattan. Brett Baer is joining us from the Fox News Channel. Is there anything late developing out of the Fox News room?
Well, the fatalities are going up. I mean, I think we've got up to 6 dead now, and I think most of these are from striking people. It was a Home Depot kind of pickup truck, so it was like a rental pickup truck that went down this bike path, which didn't actually look like a bike path. I don't know if you know Lower West Side, and it's, you know, wide enough for a vehicle, but obviously not meant for vehicle traffic. Apparently went down for a long time and hit multiple people. And then what is in dispute is whether the guy had a gun or 2 guns, or he was, we do know he was shot by police twice and is in custody. He did not die, but we don't know whether that was a real gun, whether it was whether he actually fired any shots. We don't know that yet.
Okay, so we'll take that off the reporting at the moment, because that part has been a little unclear. And there's also been a little bit of pullback, because we know in situations like this, reporting is often in the early stages. You talk to people on the scene, witnesses, or sometimes law enforcement folks who, you know, are not in the coordinating part of law enforcement, but in the responsive part of law enforcement, and everybody's got a little bit different angle on that. And some of the stuff that is early reporting does not stand up. The one thing that we know for sure is that this part of the incident is over, and that the gunman is in custody, or that the assailant in this case is in custody.
Exactly. That is true. Now, listen, there are multiple witness accounts. Associated Press has people telling them about gunshots, but there was police response via gunfire, and so we're trying to iron that out now. But it looks like you're going to have multiple dead and a couple dozen maybe injured based on the truck going down the bike path.
Brett, are you hearing what we also were hearing, that the possible link to terror, or is it stronger than that? What is it you guys have been going with or have heard from authorities?
I mean, it's early. We have police experts who are saying you can't look at this and not see, you know, Nice. You can't look at this and not see those past attempts to use vehicles as a weapon. So, you know, these are just experts, not guys that are on the scene saying this is definitively what's happening, but clearly it doesn't look like a guy that just missed the turn.
It's a deliberate act. I mean, the one thing that we know for sure, the one way that the New York police are categorizing this is as a deliberate act. So now the question
is... in that case, you call it terrorism. I think we're all sensitive about jumping to jihadist terrorism. But whatever happened, it was deliberate, and the police are saying this guy meant to hurt people. So in that sense, it is terrorism.
I know when we were calling you earlier today, we wanted to talk a little bit about the president getting ready for his trip to Asia, trying to get the tax reform legislation moving, all in the aftermath of what happened yesterday, which is, you know, you got Paul Manafort and his crony being indicted, and then you got the guilty plea already by a guy that wrapped up that nobody had ever heard of before that.
And still no one can pronounce his name.
Right, even though...
Papadopoulos.
Yeah, I know.
Nice job.
We know. I mean, Anna's Greek. She knows how to pronounce
this. This is easy for me, but apparently someone thought it was George Stephanopoulos, and it's not.
Yeah.
It's George Papadopoulos.
Poor Wolf Blitzer could not get that figured out. It was not George Stephanopoulos.
No, I couldn't. Yeah. He thought it was Snuffleupagus. Sesame Street.
Even worse.
So, also a very famous Greek-American. All right, so let's talk about this. What is the sense of how successful the president's going to be able to be now with Republicans, who seemed to, despite you had a couple, you know, high profile Republicans last week step away from the president and turn their fire against him, and now you even had John McCain again today turning against the president, turning his fire against him. But can a tax deal? That's what everybody's kind of waiting for. What is tax reform going to look like, and can it get done? Can it get done now?
Yes, because, listen, for Republicans, the existential threat to their existence in the majority is not getting this done. They did not get health care across the finish line, although they're going to reportedly, at the turn of the new year, give it another shot. But to not get this done, to not get it across the finish line, would be devastating no matter what happens to Manafort and to the Mueller investigation. It would be self-inflicted. So that is like the driving force up on Capitol Hill, is trying to figure out a way to a win. Now, getting from here to there could be ugly. We just heard from Kevin Brady, the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, saying that a tax reform bill will be released tomorrow. Now, that is a written bill with specifics that is going to be released. Now, is that the final thing? No. But it is going to be a full text getting out tomorrow, sometime before 11:59 Eastern time. So,
and 59 seconds.
I think that that in and of itself is going to be a big moment, and whether they can rally the troops on the specifics will be the challenge. But the driving force is to get a W.
You're hearing from Wall Street the reaction to some news that maybe they were going to phase in those corporate tax cuts over several years leading up to 2022 or something. Just a working plan, but Wall Street didn't seem to like the sound of that, meaning that they were already sort of factoring in that they're going to get that cut sooner rather than later.
Yep, and I think they're analyzing all aspects of it. Their big push right now is the state and local taxes push. The New York delegation, New Jersey delegation, they are not too pleased with the SALT, the state and local taxes portion of tax reform. And so there is a full court press to get that done.
The home mortgage deduction seems to possibly be on the chopping block. You've got obviously the state and local tax. You got 401k piece.
Yep.
I mean, the funny thing is, as soon as the president gets any kind of criticism about this, wait, you're taking away what?
We're not going to touch that.
Wait, no. And then he goes, no, don't worry, I want it. But then, there's a lot of cooks in this kitchen, right? So, I mean, it's one of the issues I think they've had this entire year trying to get stuff done, is because these are, when you make a promise on the campaign trail, one of the reasons that these are not easy promises to keep is because they are going to affect people, and the effect is going to be, at least in the short term, people are going to be paying, you know, they may on their paychecks be paying less, but then on April 15th of the following year, they're going to owe more at the end, because they won't be taking into account those kinds of deductions. And what I see these guys doing and watch for this very closely, mm-hmm. is that this won't take effect until the 2020 tax year. So this is this is the trick that was used by Democrats and Barack Obama in the after health care, was that none of the stuff really took effect until 2013, till he was already in for his second term.
Right.
I see them ripping a page out of that playbook now and not making this effective, so that people won't see what the real impact of this is going to be on their pocketbooks. They'll think they've got a tax decrease, but then in April of 2021, months after either President Trump is re-sworn in or someone else is sworn in, then the full sum and total of the effect will be felt.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I'm going to have the Council of Economic Advisors, the head, Kevin Haslett, on the show tonight, and I'll press him on all those.
Yeah, would you ask about the 2020 thing? Yeah, there you go.
Yes,
get on that 401k thing, and get on that SALT thing, and get on the mortgage interest deduction. These are killing me.
You're just programming your
Just send me a list.
Yeah, I got it. Don't worry.
Send me a list.
I'll send it. I got it, Brett. Don't worry about it. All right, Brett Baer, Fox News Channel. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Brett.
We'll see you.
All right. And again, we're watching the situation in New York as it's developing here. Repeating, Judy Pilak's got the news coming up in just a few minutes. But the story is that there was a truck that plowed into bikers in New York City, up to 6 people dead. There are some questions about whether or not gunfire was exchanged between the driver and law enforcement, or was just going one way. The driver was struck by police fire and is said to be in custody. It is being called a deliberate act. We'll have details on that coming your way. But first, Judy's news, 2 minutes away. Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. We are we're awaiting more details to emerge here from the situation in New York. You just heard Judy give you as much detail as basically we have here, which is that there is there has been a multi-casualty incident that happened in New York on the lower west side of New York, in Tribeca. There's a bike path that goes parallel to the West End Highway. And right as it kicks in, not too far from the World Trade Center, maybe 3/4 of a mile or less from the World Trade Center, because Manhattan sort of starts to taper at the bottom there, as it turns into the curve at the bottom. And it was at the very end of this bike path that a person in a rental, what appears to be a rental pickup, got onto the bike path, started mowing people down. As many as 6 people were injured fatally, we're told. And the actual person who is in custody, the driver, we're told, is in custody. Unclear if he was actually involved in some form of a gun battle with police, though. That's one of the things that everybody is looking at this point, because shots were fired. Police, it is said, Brett Baer just told us, Fox News is reporting that 2 people have been shot, two shots into this driver subdue him.
And you have multiple witnesses saying they heard gunshots. Now, whether those are police gunshots or coming from this driver, who some said he also had a gun, that's really unclear right now, but they just said everyone started running. He crashed into a school bus, proceeded at full speed, witnesses are saying, right up that bike path you just described, Ro, striking multiple cyclists whose bikes, a couple of them, are badly damaged, if not part of one of them looks shattered. And then they're just saying, thank God the trick-or-treaters weren't out yet, though this is a very busy area, a cycling path and a road in terms of driving traffic area of New York.
And there are a couple different medical facilities down in this area as well. So that at least is the good news, is that for those who were seeking it, medical attention was available fairly close by here.
Yeah,
so we're just kind of hoping that that perhaps helped save some people along the way here.
I hope so. But they say as many as 6 people are dead from this incident. And the driver's in custody, so no immediate threat. But they're trying to figure out who he is and tend to those people who are injured. And the number, the totals on how many are injured, and even the fatalities are not perfectly clear at this hour.
No. No, they're not. And as we do see now a picture of the pickup truck. Again, this is one mm-hmm. of those. It's not like a, you know, full rental truck, as some would describe it. It really is just the size. It's a little bit larger than a car, essentially, with a flatbed in back. Mm-hmm. A low flatbed, not even a full pickup truck. It's almost like a delivery, like almost a cart-ish kind of vehicle, but a full car size vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and it appears to be rented. It appears to be rented by Home Depot. It did have a Home Depot sign on it, as we're looking at pictures of this, you do see an area. Both the driver and passenger side doors are open.
Yeah,
this is off the bike path. It had left the bike path at that point. And it's at an intersection at the corner of West, which is the West Side Highway, and Chambers, which is an east-west street in Lower Manhattan. And it is it's there, and there does appear to be a blood stain, large bloody area just next to
where the truck came to its final stop.
Right, and it does appear that may be where the driver of the truck took his last stand with police, or this stand with police. Again, we're told the driver. We have not been told whether the driver's dead or alive in this, but he is in custody. That's what's being said.
And they are describing it as an intentional act. Some are saying possibly terrorism, whatever you call it. This wasn't initially, the reports were that it might have been some kind of an accident where two cars plowed into each other and then the truck went out of control onto the bike path. That does not appear from many, many witness accounts now after the fact that this was an intentional act, deliberately went down that bike path and mowed into those people, those innocent people.
All right. Now, the Fox News Channel is reporting. Now, this is Fox reporting this.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to watch the different reporting as it comes in here. And then we unfortunately have a world in which we now have to be sensitive about who's telling us the story.
Yeah, well,
at any given moment.
I think at any time when you have a breaking news scene like this, you know, witnesses will tell you one thing and that later turn out to be not quite true, because in the moment of dealing with chaos, it's hard to process details.
All right, we're now being told, the Associated Press is reporting that 6 people are dead, 15 hurt after the vehicle drives into the bike path near the World Trade Center. Not too far from the World Trade Center. So this is—I would not classify this as a World Trade Center site, by the way. Some people are calling it that. It's still quite a distance from the World Trade Center,
mm-hmm.
And in Manhattan, you know, I mean, there's a lot of activity
a lot
between
of real
places.
Estate. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
It might be in other places. It might be closer, but in this, I wouldn't call it this neighborhood. It's not even considered that neighborhood. And Fox News Channel is reporting that the NYC attack suspect, I'm just going to read this directly from Fox News Channel. NYC attack suspect shouted Allah Akbar after exiting the vehicle, NYPD says.
Yeah. And there are witnesses. New York Daily News is reporting now several different witnesses did hear gunshots and see people shot. So that, again, is the part we're not sure of, but that the unidentified driver shot 2 more people, according to New York Daily News, when he pulled a gun and tried to run from his vehicle after running down the bicyclist.
All right. More details on this as they become available. Violetta Podomatic at the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
The driver, he didn't look like he was bleeding or anything per se, but he did have a noticeable limp as he was getting out of his car. He did look like he was dragging his foot a little bit. He was screaming in the street. He looked frustrated, panicked, confused.
Contra with Anna DeBlantis. At least 6 dead and 15 now injured. That's the latest number that we have in this Lower Manhattan, what is being called a terrorist incident or deliberate incident. Let's put mm-hmm. it that way. Of a pickup truck driving onto a bike path mowing down bicyclists and pedestrians, runners on this bike path for maybe a quarter mile of the bike path, and then driving off the bike path. The suspect in this case engaged police. There's mixed results here in terms of the what we're getting from law enforcement in terms of whether or not this person did have a gun. And what he was saying, you just heard from an eyewitness there saying that the guy sounded frustrated and was yelling when he got out of his car.
Can I jump in here real quick?
Yes,
because ABC News is now reporting 7 dead, and they are also saying it is being investigated as an act of terror.
Okay. All right. Here is this is another eyewitness named Eugene.
I was just coming out of work of 26. And as I'm walking down West Street, I hear something behind me. When I turn, it's a truck, a pickup truck, a white pickup truck. And he ran over two guys. Unfortunately, I went up to the body, and they passed away. And he kept going down on the bike path on West Street, down by the park. And then he hit a few cars. And then when I heard the cars get hit, I looked that way, and I heard gunshots, and then everybody started running. Yeah, he went down the bike path. There was guys riding their city bikes. They were mangled. The one guy's body was mangled. I went down to see, to see what else was going on. And when I turned the corner, a big a yellow school bus, he had crashed into the middle of it, and there was people inside, and it wasn't a pretty sight.
No. Well, city bikes he's referring to are like our divvies.
Mm-hmm.
That's the rental bikes. There's a rental bike station right next to where his car came to a stop. And the park he's referring to is Washington Market Park, for people who are familiar with it.
Very popular bike path is being described, and not your typical bike path, wider. So this truck had no problem going down that bike path. And the witnesses are saying he drove down it at full speed, clearly, deliberately, according to these eyewitness accounts. And then now New York Times is reporting that the driver jumped out of the truck with two fake guns, and police officers shot him at that moment. Again, he's at the hospital, appears to have survived that shooting. But they think there's no immediate threat to the community or that area, but they do believe they have the person responsible for this tragedy.
And as you also mentioned, it does appear that a school bus was involved in this incident as well. There are now pictures surfacing of a school bus that appears to have been impacted by something. We can only assume it's this rental pickup truck. Because the rental pickup truck has front end damage as well.
Serious front end damage. And there are, multiple shots from the scene. I don't know if you're looking at these two, Ro, where you see the mangled bikes and you see the people who are injured being tended to by emergency workers on the side of the road. And again, ABC News has updated. It's believed 7 people have now been killed and as many as 15 injured by this act.
All right. We'll keep you up to date on this story as developments warrant. We obviously are waiting to find out if there is any kind of an identity for this assailant, and if there's any kind of motivation that has been, at a moment like this, I'm hesitant to say things that have not been confirmed by more than one news source. It's one thing to get it confirmed by a number of people, right? That's the journalistic way. You have to have at least 2 sources. Mm-hmm. But now I kind of look at it as news sources as well, because I don't know how many they're getting it from.
Things are moving so fast and furious in a situation like this.
And sometimes things go on the board and come off the board. And NBC and I believe NBC and CBS are still saying, and CNN are still saying 6 dead. ABC has now gone with 7 dead. But again, there is a medical facility not too far from where this occurred.
Right.
So
it's possible. You don't know what happened to someone's condition. But they've shut off 34th Street as they investigate and roped off that entire area of New York right there. And in order to investigate and tend to the victims, many of whom are still, they're the ones who are the least injured, are just being tended to at the scene.
All right. And now senior law enforcement say that this incident is being investigated as possible terror. Right. I mean, obviously, we've been kind of tracking that as as well as we can. That does seem to be lining up with what everybody is saying here. And it does follow the pattern of an incident like this. I mean, this does remind you, as Brett Baird joined us just a few minutes ago to talk about this, this does remind you of the truck attacks in Nice and other places around Europe. And this has become a very it's become the weapon of the lone wolf, if you will, in incidents like this. It'll be just a matter of time before some terrorist organization takes credit for this. Now, whether they take credit for it and mean it, you've seen ISIS take credit for things that turns out they were not related to. You saw that happen in Las Vegas, where ISIS immediately took credit for the gunman there, and it does not, still very, very unlikely that that was the case.
You said that Fox was reporting only that he had shouted out something being shot by
Fox News Channel is reporting that he had screamed out Allah Akbar when he came out of the vehicle. They're the only ones going with that at the moment, so we'll just have to wait to see where that leads us. But you do have New York law enforcement saying that this is this incident is being investigated as an act of terror. Mm-hmm. It's a mass casualty incident, and it is also a deliberate act, clearly, because this guy stayed on the bike path for a long time, mowing down bicyclists and pedestrians along the way of this bike path for what appears to be about a quarter mile that he was driving this pickup truck, rented pickup truck, down the bike path. Again, this is in the lower west side of Manhattan in the Tribeca neighborhood, about three quarters of a mile from the World Trade Center. About another half mile to the north of it would be Soho. This is right at West End Highway, essentially, in Chambers, for people who are familiar with New York. Mm-hmm. So it's there's an entry to the tunnel to New Jersey from there. There is also it's a highly trafficked, very, very busy, especially in the late afternoon part of Manhattan.
Right. And the bike path is also especially well traveled. It's being described by locals as being a very busy bike path at this time of day, even.
Right. Because it's the downtown part of Manhattan where there's many office buildings around the World Trade Center, and then you get into residences right at this area. All right. It's 4:00. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN, Chicago, WGNradio.com. Judy's News being brought to you by AppleChevy.com. Amazon Echo users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It's 4:00. Rococho with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. Tom Skilling joins us right now.
Hello, Ro.
From the WGN TV Weather Center, and we'll talk a little bit about Halloween tonight and what the weather forecast is going to be as the sun is going down. It's quite cold out there, but we are awaiting them. Before we get on that, we are awaiting a press conference in New York. Law enforcement is set to talk in about 5 minutes, and we'll take you there live to give us details about the investigation now into what appears to be a terrorist act in Lower Manhattan, the Lower West Side of Manhattan, in Tribeca. It appears to be either at least one individual who was driving a rented pickup truck and struck a number of bicyclists and pedestrians on a bike path, and then was engaged with gunfire by police, and is now said to be in custody. But ABC News reporting 7 dead, as many as 15 injured in this mass casualty event.
And the Washington Post is reporting that both New York police and FBI investigators suspect terrorism as the motive. He has not been identified. We don't know who he is. I imagine we may find out more at this press conference. And then New York police are also tweeting out that he did display fake guns as he got out of his car after plowing into people on the street and on that bike path and killing several people.
Wow.
Well, there does seem to be now some images of him. This is really interesting in this era where everything is photographed on some level. ABC News now has a photograph of a guy who looks to be presenting two guns. His back to the camera, and he's wearing a hoodie. And he's got his both arms out presenting these guns as he's out of the vehicle that is in question here.
That fits the narrative. They said there were some teenagers coming from that local high school that's just about a block away saying that they thought it was some kind of a Halloween trick or something because they saw this man in the middle of the street with these guns and a hoodie. Of course, it was a very, very serious situation.
Stuyvesant High School is right there.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What is, wow. This is, you know, this is the era in which we live, though, right?
Boy, isn't this something, Ro? It's something every day, isn't it? This is down by the memorial, is it, in New York?
Well, it's...
You said several blocks away.
Yeah, several blocks away. Gotcha. It's about six blocks from that.
Wow.
They're now saying that he traveled 20 blocks. He may have on this bike path,
wow,
which goes, you know, up and down the Hudson River.
Yeah.
And it's... It does appear that he emerged at Chambers Street, and again, this is all in New York City, and he may have entered at Pier 40, which is the which is kind of a, it's on Houston Street, and it's a you know, multi-use kind of entertainment area up there, and that's where this bike path begins, and he may have come all the way down. Then you cross where the Holland Tunnel kicks over to New Jersey there. This is all a very, very heavily trafficked,
sure,
very
is
busy part,
yeah,
of Manhattan, where the downtown business district, if you will, where the World Trade Center is and the federal quarter down there and all that, turns up into residences up in this area.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's you wonder, don't you, what you do to prevent something like that. You know, who's to keep somebody from a vehicle doing something really nutty like that? It seems like Mission Impossible, doesn't it? You know, I noticed when, you know, on the Bob Billiken parade, we had streets and sand trucks on every side street feeding into the parade route. But how often can you do that? You know, that's a parade along a specific route. Mm-hmm. What do you do just as a matter of course? You can't have trucks parked on every street, can you?
No.
So, you know, it's a devil of a situation to get a handle on.
It is. And that's why you've seen so many concrete barriers go up along,
yeah,
public,
I guess,
gathering,
that's what you do, huh?
Pedestrian, Anna? Strips and,
yeah,
just trying to do whatever they can to protect against something just unimaginable that someone would want to do this, and they do. And so you think about, how do you protect against it? In this case, as Rose stated, there was a hospital very close. Police were very close. They got on it right away.
Boy, they must have, huh?
Take this man into custody pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And the people who could be brought to the hospital very quickly as well.
Well, it's going to be interesting to hear who this character is, you know, and who he's affiliated with, if anybody, and all the rest. If they think it's terrorism, that should be fascinating. To see who the latest one is to pull on and act,
right,
like this.
Right. And of course, you've started to see these things, whether it was in Nice 2 summers ago,
yeah,
or, you know, other situations throughout Europe.
London.
And yeah, where you've had,
yeah,
people,
right,
just, you know, a vehicle, and especially, you know, they say in Europe, you know, it's so much easier to get a vehicle than it is to get a weapon.
Yeah.
So the vehicles become the weapons. And in this particular case, it does appear that that this guy had a vehicle, and we're being told that these were fake guns that he had.
So he didn't actually fire them?
Well, it's unclear. I'm a little skeptical about that report, because
that was from the official New York Police Department's Twitter feed.
Interesting.
Even though eyewitnesses had said they thought he fired. Sometimes you might have mistaken the police gunfire from,
sure,
for the driver or the suspect's,
exactly,
guns.
It's hard to know what's going on in the heat of the moment. You know, it's interesting. I was over in London just a couple weeks ago as part of this trip I took, and it's amazing how life goes on, you know? We were right in the area where these two terrorist attacks involving vehicles took place, and everybody was moving around, you know.
I'm going to stop you for a second.
Sure.
There is now video on ABC of this guy moving.
Wow.
Having left the vehicle and running in the blocks around this area. So this is really pretty, pretty dramatic. And again, you know, we go back to this notion that everything is recorded, everything is available.
Where did that come from, Ro? Did somebody shoot it?
It's unclear. You know, they're not
identifying.
They
it.
Didn't identify it yet.
Yeah,
you're seeing just a lot of they're trying to call as much social media video as they possibly can here,
mm-hmm,
of this incident. Obviously, that's what they do in law enforcement as well. And the NYPD, very interesting, a very different tactic being employed by the NYPD. They're putting up on their social media as many pictures as they possibly can of the incident in the area. Mm-hmm. You don't see that everywhere.
What's the thought behind that, Roy?
I think they want to try to encourage people to give them as much information as possible.
Gotcha.
And show things. And then, you know, maybe develop leads like the truck. They're showing pictures of the truck. They're showing pictures of the area. They're getting as much out there as they can. Because in a dynamic situation like this, you do have this incident that has come to an end, obviously, because they have they've been able to take down the assailant here. Mm-hmm. Question, though, is does he have accomplices? Were there other people involved? Is there another part of this attack that possibly, you know, follows on here?
I suppose, too, in putting that up, you'll jog people's memories and maybe get some
reaction.
They
saw him before. They saw him on his way in. Did he have other people around him? I mean, they're trying to get as much information. And, you know, we now move at the speed of light in terms of information here. And in a situation like this, you want to get as much current information, things that happened within the last hour or two, into the hands of law enforcement here. Because obviously this is an FBI and a New York Police Department incident that is being investigated here. And as Anna was just mentioning, you know, there's a high school across the street, essentially, from where this car came to a stop, or this rental pickup truck came to a stop.
There are already some students walking in the area heading home from school.
And there's a performing arts center right across the street from it. I mean, there's a lot of apparently school bus that was carrying some special needs kids was struck in this as well.
And it's also confusing, too, because you're hearing eyewitness reports saying he was being chased by someone, and they didn't say it's a police officer. So it's unclear if that was some kind of person trying to, you know, save others.
Abort the situation.
Exactly. Try to tackle him or what. But he did appear to have two guns in his hands as he ran down the street after he exited the vehicle with the hoodie on, just sort of before the police were able to.
Well, the video they are showing does show him running around sort of in a circle.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. He was running around like crazy, screaming, and that somebody was chasing him, and he had the guns in the air, you know, in each hand, and just sort of running as he exited the vehicle.
Jeez.
I mean.
Wow. Wow. This is a lot of detail here starting to emerge. And like we said, any minute now, there's going to be a press conference by law enforcement in Lower Manhattan here, the Lower West Side of Manhattan, about seven blocks away from the World Trade Center and the memorial site there.
Yeah.
You know, it's unclear if there's any kind of connection here to that. But this is, you know, there's a lot of stuff in between the memorial site and where this incident took place. And it appeared to have started north at what's known as Pier 40, and there's a park there as well. If people have ever been down to, you know, Soho or Tribeca, this is the area in which this is all taking place.
You were talking earlier, you were looking for confirmation or second source. CNN is also now reporting that the suspect, the NYPD suspect in custody, shouted Allah Akbar before he was struck down, and that the FBI is now in charge of the case, indicating they believe it is terrorism.
Tom, we've just been given the two-minute warning here in terms of the press conference. Just quickly, what's the low going to be tonight?
Low tonight, 27 coolest inland areas. 31 in the city, though, at O'Hare, and 36 along the lakefront. Then we go up to 48 tomorrow and 56 on Thursday. Not quite as warm as we'd hope, but, you know, that's pretty seasonable this time of the year. Today was the coolest day, though, and since back in March. 7 months ago, so
that's, Tom.
Yeah.
Tom.
That's terrible.
Tom, because, you know, when I hear you say that, then I hear it's not going to be warm like this again till March.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, think about it, Ro. We close the books on a month that's been remarkably warm.
Okay, I know.
That's what makes it hurt even more.
Yeah.
But when things are over, Tom, they're over, and I just don't like to deal with
that. It's never over in autumn around here, Ro. You know, we'll be back. We'll see some warm weather yet.
All right. Well, I'm really hoping so. That's what I'm saying. All right. Well, we'll see you on the WGN TV News.
Sounds good.
5, 6, 9, and 10.
Look forward to following your coverage on this, Ro and Anna, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks very much.
You bet, guys.
Right there. All right. We're staying by for the press conference, which is going to be taking place here in New York City. I believe this is at New York Police Headquarters in New York, FBI and the NYPD together now on this investigation into this mass casualty incident on the lower west side of Manhattan in the Tribeca neighborhood. You can see all the people we can see all the people now piling into the room, and this is, I believe, a New York Police Department spokesman who's going to start this.
Didn't mean to step on you. Flashback to the 80s, Laugh Along with the Goldbergs, starring Chicago's very own Jeff Garlin, weeknights 10:30 and 11 on WGN-TV.
All right, we'll continue to watch any kind of developments that are relevant here coming out of New York City, where there was an incident of what is being investigated as a terror incident involving a guy in a pickup truck, a rented pickup truck, driving down a bike path, mowing down people. There are now six people dead on the scene, two more dead at a hospital, so that's a total of eight dead, 11 seriously injured, but now described as not life-threatening. Mm-hmm. Now ABC News is identifying the assailant here is Saifulo Saipov, 29-year-old male from Tampa, Florida. Saifulo Saipov. Mm-hmm. There's both Fox News Channel and CNN are reporting that he was screaming Allah Akbar after getting out of this vehicle. He was armed with a paintball gun and a pellet gun in each hand, and then was dropped by a responding individual New York police officer who was on post near this incident. This happened on the lower west side of New York in the Tribeca neighborhood. This is at just south of where the Holland Tunnel entrance is to take you off Manhattan to New Jersey. It's a very, very busy part of the city along the Hudson River. There was this bike path that was along the Hudson River. Very pretty, picturesque part of the city. High school, Stuyvesant High School, was right there. This was a heavily trafficked area that this incident took place in. And the gunman shot twice in the torso and then taken to a hospital where he's said to be alive.
I thought it was fascinating to hear the New York Police Department talk about how since he was driving a rental truck, how they had talked and met with all of the local rental agencies to kind of explain what suspicious behavior, suspicious activity might look like when renting vehicles like this, and trying to increase awareness, because of after the incidents in Germany with the Christmas market, remember, and then, of course, Nice, you saw situations like that where people had rented trucks and then driven into pedestrian walks, and that is the kind of situation they're dealing with here. I think the heroic story here is that New York Police Department officer who was close by at the time and sprang into action was able to apprehend this guy pretty quickly before he could do any more damage.
He was running through traffic. There's video now, active video of this guy running through traffic. There's from a number of different angles of him getting away from the scene and then running around in a circle, then brandishing the weapons and then being shot down by this one responding police officer. Pretty amazing, and heads up work by that officer, we should say. Brendan Riley is an alderman here in Chicago. He's joining us. We were going to talk about some other things here, but let's talk a little bit about how the city of Chicago prepares for incidents like this. Obviously, the same sort of network. I know the federal law enforcement has a pretty good network of outreach to businesses that they think could be potentially targeted by individuals like rental car, rental truck businesses, things like that. Those same sorts of programs are in effect here in Chicago, I'm assuming?
Yes. In fact, the Department of Homeland Security does a regular review of what are considered to be prime targets for terrorist attacks. And most of those targets, as you can imagine, are down here in the Central Business District. So that's a regular review that's going on. You'll note that some, I don't want to name out addresses, but right. some of our larger buildings that are very popular with tourists have all sorts of extra measures in place, security bollards, extra heavy planters on the curb lanes, these sorts of things. So the city has been learning, obviously, from these terrible events, and my thoughts and prayers are with the folks in New York, a senseless tragedy, and that's, of course, where I'm from and my family's from. But the city of Chicago, I think if you're walking around downtown right now as we speak, you'll note a heightened police presence on the right-of-way. Mm-hmm. In key areas where you have high pedestrian traffic, we have a good presence in place. But this is something that the city is constantly and on a daily basis reviewing, tweaking, and refining because there are so many threats out there and there's so many different ways of committing acts of terrorism now The police and Homeland Security have to be creative in trying to plan for these things.
You know, you think for every incident like this where someone gets away with murdering innocent people in this way, there are so many of these that are averted because of people say something or there's some kind of a tip or police just doing excellent work or authorities being on top of this via the cameras and the all kinds of the security systems that we have in place. And you thank God for that at a time like this.
Absolutely. And actually, a lot of folks are experiencing this now on their cell phones. We have something called reverse 911. So when we have major special events downtown, folks that live within that area or are working within that area through geo-targeting are getting special voicemail messages or text messages from our 911 center, mm-hmm. reminding people if you see something, say something, be vigilant. And I think those little reminders go a long, long way. Mm-hmm. We get comfortable in our day-to-day, but people have to keep an eye out for suspicious packages, individuals, and when they do see these things, call 911. Worst thing that happens is it's a false alarm. But without those kinds of tips and that kind of vigilance, we're at a disadvantage. And so the police department is depending on all of us, the general public, to help them do their jobs better. We're also more regularly monitoring our OEMC cameras, our surveillance cameras we have deployed throughout downtown. But no, this is a time where there's heightened
concern. We have a really good
concern.
Network of that throughout the city, don't we?
We actually have one of the best of major cities in America, and we've gone even beyond that. We don't just maintain our public network of cameras. We're now tying into private security cameras owned by these different buildings. And so it's comprehensive, and we do have
added resources.
You can do
that. Even if you're a single-family home and you sign up with Xfinity, for example, you're able to, you can opt into that system, right?
That's right. It's easier to do in the higher density buildings, but for sure, we have a program where you can give the department and OEMC, emergency management, access to your cameras. Obviously, you have to have some connectivity and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yes, we take advantage of that wherever we can. The broader and fuller the network, the better.
Right. And you're starting to see that here in this particular incident on the Lower West Side of Manhattan, because you're seeing images now of this guy. And again, this is an incident that took place less than 3 hours ago. Right. And it is over. A lot of detail has emerged and pictures from almost every angle have emerged. I mean, this is the brave new world in which we live.
Yeah, unfortunately. And, you know, thank God for that New York City police officer for being there and doing what he had to do. But, yeah, New York City, unfortunately, they have to cope with this at least as much as the city of Chicago, certainly a lot more. And we learn from their best practices. And I think it's just a real shame that this is the reality in today's world.
It is. You heard the, I think it was the Governor Cuomo who said that New York's a symbol of freedom and democracy, and that also makes us a target. And we're going to go on living our lives and be vigilant and not let this change us. But it does seem like a disproportionate number of hits are there in that particular city.
Well, let's just say, though, and I think it's important to note here, as we were talking about this coming on the air, this incident had occurred about an hour before, but we're just starting to get word of it, starting at about 2:15, 2:20 Chicago time. And as we were coming on the air, you started to see a response by the Chicago Police Department already downtown. I mean, obviously, we're here at the corner of Michigan Avenue and the river.
Mm-hmm. And
we're seeing this is obviously a prime intersection of Chicago afternoon traffic and morning traffic. And so you're seeing Chicago police response up and down the streets. In a situation like this, all the major cities are put on alert.
For sure. Yeah. An alert goes out and then they prepare for a piggyback or a copycat type of incident same day. So, yes, we're prepared today. I think everyone should rest assured knowing that we've got a full presence on our sidewalks and main streets. And so if you're a pedestrian heading to the trains or heading home, we'll have plenty of police officers here to keep you safe.
And I think another thing that maybe Chicagoans are not as keenly aware of, but should make us feel better, is that there is a significant amount of federal assistance here too.
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously in New York, it's a robust federal assistance in situations like this because they've been targeted so, you know, famously there.
Right. Right.
But here we also have available to us too federal assistance. Everybody's sort of, you know, all hands on deck in a situation like this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, given the fact that we're the kind of the transportation hub for the nation, mm-hmm. we're lucky to get extra resource for that. But you're right. We have a lot of folks downtown that work for the federal government that are plugging in with our police department on a daily basis. Also, don't discount the fact we have an awful lot of undercover police officers throughout the Central Business District. Those are our eyes and ears. Mm-hmm. And frankly, we don't always want the bad guys to see them. So I can assure you, we do have a very comprehensive network. Mm-hmm. We deploy resources quickly when we hear about incidents like this. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of confidence in the police department and Department of Homeland Security to help keep us safe here.
The president just tweeted here, New York City looks like another attack by a very sick and deranged person. Law enforcement is following this closely. Caps not in the USA! Exclamation point.
Mm-hmm. All right. Alderman, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Sorry
for having
me. Under happier circumstances here, but appreciate your assistance here. Violetta Potter-Max at the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. It's the Roe Conn Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, we are going to get you caught up on this situation out of New York and also the rest of the news of the day here as Judy stands by with the top of the hour news about 2 minutes away. And then we have the top five of five and some other things we will be getting to, but we'll keep you abreast of all the situation as this apparent terrorist activity in New York has now come to an end. Roe Conn Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. We will be keeping an eye throughout the rest of the afternoon on the incident in New York. And now in the city of Chicago, there is a really stepped up police presence, at least downtown, in the aftermath of this terrorist act in New York, which has taken at least 8 lives so far. And hopefully not any more than that. 11 others are hospitalized with what New York authorities are saying are not life-threatening injuries at this point, but serious injuries nonetheless. And again, it's an incident that took place at about 2 o'clock Chicago time. This was in New York City on the Lower West Side. A guy who's now been identified as 29-year-old Saifullah Saipov, last known address in Tampa, Florida, but is also being identified as a Russian national.
Yeah, he's got his social media presence is not really there. No Facebook page that anyone's been able to link, or Twitter, or the common social media sites that you normally see. But he had a Google Plus site that linked to a Russian restaurant in New York, even though his listed address is in Tampa. And that's
right.
Kind of what we know about him in terms of the imprint he has put out there about himself so far.
So we don't know too much about him. Again, 29 years old, we believe, had at one point lived in either Russia or in a former Soviet state. I think that's the best way of putting that.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he rented, or was at least driving a rented pickup truck in New York, and he went onto a bike path and mowed down bicyclists and other pedestrians, killing 8 and injuring 11 others, including hitting a school bus in which 2 kids were injured, a special needs school bus, at the end of this rampage. So
yeah.
That is what we know at the moment.
FBI has taken control as it has been identified as a likely terrorist act. But again, not too much known about this 29-year-old individual who decided to do this horrible thing to innocent people today.
Left the vehicle, was brandishing 2, not handguns, but a pellet gun and a paint gun. He was then confronted by a New York City police officer who was on post right there. There are parks and high schools in this area where it ended, and the police officer was coming out of the park and shot this individual twice in the stomach, that said, a torso. We're told he is still alive and was transported to a hospital. So.
Mayor de Blasio saying that he actually was able to stop the carnage very quickly because he responded. He was there, first of all, but then was able to respond so quickly and get him, apprehend him.
All right. Well, the top five will continue on here unabated.
It's the top five on the Roe Conn Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two. 1. Now, it's the Top 5 at 5 on the Rokon Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
It is time to get on with it. Checking in at
number 5.
The president did not take questions today about the new indictments against his old staffers, but he did get a reminder about how he just loves the press. The president was holding a meeting today to discuss the latest push for tax reform as well as his upcoming 12-day trip to Asia. As he spoke, the president declared that the media is, well, not all fake.
While I'm in Asia, members of my cabinet will be traveling all around the country, talking directly to taxpayers and focusing on the regional media, which we find to be a much more credible media, to be honest with you. In fact, I found it to be incredible how good they are.
Oh, my gosh.
Regional media.
What does that mean?
It's interesting.
Like the local media?
Yeah. Yeah.
So in other words, he's just continuing as a war on MSNBC, NBC, CNN, and the New York Times, the Washington Post.
Right. He's actually referencing there something that's kind of interesting. He's referencing media that is not network-owned media by ABC, NBC, CBS,
mm-hmm.
Or CNN, which is CNN doesn't own local media, really. Doesn't own local media. Sometimes can provide data or information
content.
Or video
mm-hmm.
or content to them, what he's talking about is local television stations, essentially, which are owned by other companies that may run CBS, ABC, NBC, or Fox programming. But then local news operations that are run by, and it makes it sound like it's regional and small, but now there are these large mega companies that own these local broadcast stations around the country. And it's an interesting observation on his part, or interesting acknowledgement on his part, because there's a very controversial sale about to occur involving one of those companies, two of those companies.
And one of them he's very friendly with the owners of, and they tend to give him positive coverage, in addition to have one of his friends working there at a very high level and also pushes out positive coverage. I think the one positive thing, though, that he's done is I don't think it's bad that you have regional or local media asking questions as part of the White House. There's different concerns. We found out even through the election, people who might be living in Upper Michigan versus New York working for one of the networks, and some things are missed. Some issues are missed. So that part of it, I think, was a positive thing. It's just the war on the media that I think becomes difficult to stomach when you think about us living in a democracy and the freedom of the press.
All right. Checking in at
number 4.
Day after major news about indictments and a guilty plea, Sarah Huckabee Sanders knocked the press for asking questions about the Mueller investigation. Right, because why would you ask a question about what's going on here?
Nothing to see here.
You have the campaign chairman arrested under house arrest with the threat of a $10 million bail. Another guy pleads guilty. There's nothing to see here. It's not asking any questions. ABC's Jonathan Carl asked Huckabee Sanders about Chief of Staff John Kelly saying that the president is distracted by all of this.
I don't think it's at all affecting his ability to get his job done, and that wasn't the point he was making. You guys seem completely obsessed with this while there are a lot of other things happening around the country and, frankly, a lot of other things that people care a lot more about. The media refuses to cover it, and I think that's the distraction. Instead of the focus being constantly on tax cuts and tax reform, my guess is if you look at the records, the questions that I take in here day out have far more to do with an investigation that, frankly, most Americans don't care too much about, and a whole lot less to do with policies that actually impact them.
Why are you so confident that the investigation won't go on much longer?
Because we have confidence that it's going to come to a close in short time.
My phone's ringing. I gotta go.
Gotta go.
Really?
I'm sure it's a short time. It seems like all the experts who weighed in, including on this very program yesterday, our legal experts, seem to think that because of the indictments and the length of the Manafort one in particular, that alone could take a very long time just to sort through alone. They'll take their time in this kind of a case.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can understand.
But there's nothing to see here. Your people just got arrested. I mean, I don't know. It seems like a fairly significant story. And I get that they don't want to talk about that they're upset. They want to talk about the tax reform package. It's a little tough. I mean, this is why you're creating these are self-inflicted wounds here. You're creating your own problems. And the idea that the tax reform package, here's something interesting. Republican GOP just announced in the middle of this other breaking story out of New York City that it is pulling off the table tax cuts for the wealthy.
So they're listening, in other words, to people saying that they don't want this as part of the package. You're saying that's an improvement.
I personally don't think it's an improvement, but I think that it is. But the GOP is going to pull that up. Now, the question is, who is the president going to hear from in that?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so the idea of trickle down, and that, you know, if you give tax breaks to the wealthy here, that they'll build more businesses and spend the money and keep the economy moving.
When you say the wealthiest, are you talking the corporate taxes and the business taxes, or are you talking the wealthy individual's ordinary income? Because those are two separate things. I think the argument from the White House has been, when everyone talks about the taxes only impacting or being the greatest for the wealthy, they're saying that well, no, those are businesses that are getting tax cuts, and they will trickle down, and they'll hire more people, and they'll buy more equipment, and they'll positively impact our economy. So they're making the pro-business argument on the business cuts and saying that the wealthiest won't necessarily get the highest tax breaks.
House Republican leaders will propose keeping the top income tax rate for high levels of personal income, according to four people briefed on the planning.
That's interesting.
Details came during a briefing by Paul Ryan this afternoon. They will.
That's a development.
The seven existing tax income brackets will go into three brackets, lowering the top rate from 39.6% to 35%. But after that was the original idea. But after weeks of internal deliberation, they decided to retain the 39.6% tax rate for high levels of income. Anything 750, the tax rate could be applied to income at levels such as 750,000 to a million. Through the details remaining in flux, though the details remaining in flux.
I wonder if this gives them an opportunity to pick up some independents or some people who are on the fence a little bit, trying to pick up some votes for this. Because the president said today he wants it passed by the House by Thanksgiving and amended into law by the end of the year.
39.6% rate right now applies to over $470,000 in income. And Grover Norquist, president of the Americans for Tax Reform, is one of the people who confirmed that the 39.6% rate would remain for the highest income. So there's something right there.
It's a change.
Okay. The president's lawyer, Jay Sekulow, was on Good Morning America. He had the same notes, saying that the many Trump surrogates have publicly made recently underplaying the Papadopoulos role in the campaign.
He was a volunteer with the campaign, served on one of the committees. That you've been involved in campaigns. There are a lot of these committees. It evidently, according to the documents that the government has filed, he was in contact with individuals that purported to be somehow involved with Russia or Russian government. It's not clear from the documents what they actually were. The end result is the meeting doesn't take place. Well, so when you had it, you just had all this conversation about collusion. Remember this. Collusion in and of itself, there's no crime of collusion. What is a violation of the law here? I go back to that. For George Papadopoulos, the violation of the law, George, was
clearly,
that he lied to FBI agents, which is clearly not condoned by the administration.
Collusion is cooperation, and that's what he was doing with Russians.
Well, okay. So he's right. This is, but let's pay attention here.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. Collusion is not a term of art in the criminal code.
Right.
Okay.
That's, we had that pointed out.
That's important, but that does not. But it's used a shorthand to describe a series of other crimes, conspiracy, treason. the little invoked, I mean, in the Manafort indictment yesterday, you know, acts against the United States of America, right? I mean, those are that's what they're talking about, right? So if you're taking the side of a foreign government over that of the United States in a proactive way, that's
a problem.
That's a problem, right? So that's really the issue at hand here, and we'll see how far that goes. But But, you know, this is the issue is he's already been, this Papadopoulos guy has already been convicted. He's already pled guilty to this. He's awaiting sentencing. It's not the question about what the crime is that he committed. The question is, who'd he give up? Who else did he testify against, or what? Who else did he put on tape?
And where does that lead?
Yeah.
And how far up the food chain?
Jay Sekulow is right out of Central Casting, by the way. You know, did you ever notice he looks like a guy playing a lawyer on TV?
Yeah, he does.
He looks like Sam Waterston's half brother.
Yes, he does.
Right? Like he should be in Law and Order.
I'm confused with a guy who used to be on the OJ trial with you. There's that one lawyer who he looks a lot like. The TV lawyer, I can't remember. I'll think of it.
But he's one of those guys that, you know,
yeah,
just looks like, I know this guy from TV somewhere.
He's got the dark glasses and kind of the hip look, the sharp suit.
Yep.
Well coiffed.
He also looks like that high-powered lawyer on The Simpsons. He's kind of got that thing. Come on, maybe develop right from him. All right, we'll get to your 3, your 2, and your 1. But first, the WGN Term Trouble Spots here is Feel Lighter, Powder Medic.
They take the kids out of the city and into a whole new world. How a cutting-edge program is creating a new kind of education. Tonight's cover story on WGN-TV News at 9.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. The top five continues. We are up to...
Number 3.
Jimmy Kimmel is taking some time off his show, and Shaquille O'Neal is filling in.
How about that?
What?
Shaq.
What happened here?
At the desk.
There's something I need to know about?
That's kind of fun.
Here he is.
Welcome to Jimmy Kimmel Live. I'm not Jimmy Kimmel. I'm your guest host, Shaquille O'Neal. That's right. Tonight, ABC goes from Blackish to Shaqish. But before we get started, I have one rule tonight. If you don't laugh, I'll kick your ass. Got it? That goes for you too, Guillermo. Whatever.
He also took shots at Charles Barkley. I thought that was funny. He was like, Jimmy has Matt Damon. I have Charles Barkley, but he's like a balder, fatter Matt Damon. He just went off Michael Jordan, everybody. Very funny.
Yeah. He next to Guillermo must really be a sight.
I know. Can you imagine?
Does Guillermo come up to his knee? I mean, it's like mid-thigh, I think. Guillermo comes up to, like, you know, it's like he's not a tall guy.
Shaq's girlfriend reaches mid-thigh for him. She's not a tall woman.
Yeah.
So he's probably used to it.
Yeah.
Having small
people
around.
Well, he jokes that trick-or-treaters are not high enough to get the candy out of his little when he hands it out. He says he doesn't also appreciate fun-sized candy because of his size.
Makes him feel bad. All right. Checking in at
number 2.
It's Halloween, and none other than WGN's own Orion Samuelson.
Nice.
Shared some of his Hollywood memories with Steve Cochran this morning. Did you hear this?
No, I didn't.
Big O, was Halloween a deal when you were a kid?
Halloween was somewhat of a deal, but a little different than today. We didn't get dressed up in costumes. But in the country, we would do things like load an outhouse in a farmyard onto a pickup and haul it into the small town of Ontario and plant it in the middle of Main Street.
And laugh! Oh, how you'd laugh.
Oh, yeah, that was so funny. And probably the hardest thing we did was to, we had a bachelor farmer living next to us that we picked on, I admit. And we took his wagon apart one night and piece by piece hoisted it to the roof of his barn so that when he got up the next morning, his wagon was sitting on the roof of the barn.
Fully assembled on the roof.
Yes, fully assembled.
Classic farm jokes.
Great.
Total burn.
Where did the tricks go from the trick-or-treat? See, that's back in the day, they still did that.
The bachelor farmer?
Yeah, he's a bachelor.
Yeah.
This guy lived alone. Yeah, they had to pick on him.
Yeah, they picked on the bachelor farmer.
Chugging milk and picking on the bachelor farmer.
Today, that would be, you get fired for your job for picking on the bachelor farmer.
No, he needs farmersonly.com. That's the problem.
That's helped a lot, I've heard.
Yeah, or Grindr.
Okay.
All right. Wait, hold on. Checking in at...
Number 1.
I can't let this go. It's got to be more Orion.
Oh, I guess the other thing we did, too, he had a dinner bell on a post in his front yard. And we got about 1,000 feet of binder twine and hooked it up to that dinner bell and then went way out into the pasture in the woods. And we'd ring the dinner bell and he'd get up to look at it and shake his head and go back to bed. And yeah.
Oh, man. Those crazy farmers and their jokes.
I think that's some form of abuse. I'm not quite sure.
A sweeter time.
Yes, right. It was right. Yes, it was a sweeter time. Mm-hmm. All right, there he is. All right, Orion Samuelson on the Steve Cochran Show. And those are
stories.
Those are two legends right there.
Yes, they are.
All right, we have got. Let's wrap this thing up. That's all I can tell you.
The top five at five.
Coming up on the program, we'll be joined by Congressman Kinzinger in the 6 o'clock hour. We'll talk a little bit about, obviously, what is happening in New York City today, as well as the plan for the tax proposal, which now has changed fairly significantly for wealthy Americans, at least. They're going to keep the top tax bracket at 39.6%, which was expected to come down to 35%.
And that wasn't one of the bargaining chips that was discussed publicly. We were hearing about 401ks getting capped, potentially in terms of the tax-free benefits. We heard about state and local taxes being excluded from your deductions and your mortgage being interest being deducted as well. But this is a new one.
Yeah, you know the president's going to get some phone calls now.
He's got a lot of wealthy friends.
He always talks about his rich friends and they're calling him all the time. Because he kept his cell phone. Remember, they took the cell phone away from Barack Obama?
Yes.
They did not take the cell phone away from Donald Trump. They should, quite honestly.
Yeah, there should be some time away from it, I think.
His press office would love it if they could just take the phone away from him. All right. But serious news in New York City today, as there was a mass casualty event on the Lower West Side. And Aaron Katursky is in New York for ABC News. And Aaron, the latest here is that we're starting to learn more about this this suspect in this case, who is a 29-year-old, is Becky National, whose last address was in Tampa, obviously accused now. If people are just joining us, the mass casualty event in New York City as this guy drove a rented pickup truck down a bike path, striking and killing six people on the bike path, and then killing two more. Well, a total of eight people were killed so far, 11 others injured, including two people in a school bus as he exited the bike path and went back toward the city streets there on the Lower West Side of New York. What do we know about the suspect here?
Not much. Saifullo Saipov is his name, 29 years old, was carrying an ID that showed him to be from Tampa, but it's believed, bro, he'd been living in Paterson, New Jersey, just across the river, and today he was in a rented truck from Home Depot driving down the bike path along the Hudson River. He had taken a purposeful turn at Houston Street onto that bike path from the West Side Highway and spent the next 8/10 of a mile mowing down anything in his way, coming to rest only because the truck hit a school bus. When it did, he got out, ended up brandishing what turned out to be a pellet gun and a paint gun, and was shot by an officer on a duty post, credited by the police commissioner here with stopping the carnage.
We should mention, while we're just into the segment here, the president has tweeted again, and this is interesting. I'd like to see what you guys think of this. We must not allow ISIS to return or enter our country after defeating them in the Middle East and elsewhere. Enough. Don't know if he's trying to draw a connection to this man's history. That's certainly not something that's publicly been revealed, other than the FBI is treating this as potential act of terror. There, I haven't heard of any connections. I'm sure
the mayor said it's an act of terrorism. There's no question about that. The guy made statements. They've looked into his history, and they have concluded that this was an act of terror. Now, whether he was inspired, whether he was a crazy person who adopted this ideology, whether he has a criminal record and was talking to ISIS in his sleep or over the phone or on email or through text message or just looking at propaganda, all of the usual things that they'll look at. That's just too early to say.
Yeah. We're not aware, though, that ISIS has taken responsibility for this at this point, right?
I haven't heard that, no.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. ISIS did take responsibility for the attack in Las Vegas. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of connectivity there.
But this is the president actually saying this. We must not allow ISIS to return or enter our country.
So it might be just more of a general statement on his part as opposed to an allusion. I don't, you know.
Oh, see.
We'll just have to see what comes out of this. And now, obviously, things are fairly clamped down in New York. We should mention that, you know, this is in the sort of between Soho and Tribeca in New York. This incident ended in Tribeca, started in Soho. And there is a major Halloween parade tonight in Soho, right?
Through Greenwich Village. It's an annual tradition. They said they couldn't cancel it now if they wanted to. But it is going to be under heavy guard, and I don't think they wanted to stop the fun in the face of this. But they, they're just going to take every precaution. They think this was isolated. They quickly shot the suspect. He's in the hospital. They don't think there's any wider threat, but there's sure going to be a big police presence out tonight and beyond.
We heard 8 innocent people lost their lives today in this, but there were also 11 injured. Do we know about those 11 injured now? I know there were 2 school children, and how badly injured do we know about those people who are in
the hospital? The kids were pretty banged up. I think they're going to be fine. I don't know the condition. They did not say. And I think, I mean, this crime scene is huge. It's over 8/10 of a mile. Jeez. And if you think about what's on a jogging and bicycle path, at first they had bodies and then they had debris and people had terrible injuries, the extent to which we're not exactly clear.
Yeah. I, to put this in perspective for Chicagoans, this would be like getting on the beach path between North Avenue and Oak Street and hitting as many people as you possibly could on that in the middle of the day. And this is a more crowded space and still limited in terms of people being able to get out of the way. It's a wide bike path, but it's still a place that this guy could have been targeting and obviously hitting and running over people. Then that what's interesting though, Aaron, is you're seeing this video that is now emerging mm-hmm. of him that was taken by I'm assuming this is cell phone video of him running in the streets in New York and. Down in this area before being shot and taken down by the police.
It was an incredible moment when the officer who was just on a duty post opened fire, struck him in the abdomen. So he will survive by all accounts. We think he's in the hospital tonight along with a number of other people. And police said he stopped the carnage. No telling what else this guy would have done. Now, the weapons that he brandished ended up being, toys, a pellet gun and a paint gun. But the police were taking no chances by now because he had left 8 dead in his wake.
Yeah. It's interesting that he would arm himself with that and then try to make a stand. Obviously, he's not going to be able to really do too much more damage with those in terms of life-threatening damage. With those items, and so you start to wonder about where, how organized was this guy? What truly were his motivations? Was he attempting suicide by police by having those? Mm-hmm. Was he attempting to flee? Obviously, he did not have explosives. So this is a whole other. It's a unique situation.
You also saw in the London attack that driver who drove into the crowds there near Parliament. Who then took out knives, remember? And they said that he had no access to guns. And one of the reasons he decided to use knives because that's what he had at his disposal. It just does seem strange that he used the fake guns, the paintball gun and a pellet gun.
Yeah.
But look, I think that's, sure, no question. But look, it's the truck. It's the vehicle. That's right. What the authorities have been the most concerned right. about, what he was armed with, what he was carrying, what kind of matter. The whole point here is that he used a vehicle, and that's what the Department of Homeland Security has been focused on the most of late.
Right, and they talked about that in the press conference, about the network of businesses that federal and local authorities are in touch with on a daily basis to try to prevent these kinds of acts, whether it's rental car companies or truck rental companies. Do we know, was this Home Depot in New York or New Jersey? Do we know which one it was?
I believe it was in New Jersey. I don't have it fully nailed down yet, Ro, but I believe it was in New Jersey. There'd been some indication that he had been living in New Jersey. But, again, we're still just a few hours after this and
sure.
trying to dig into who this guy was. It looks like he had been living or at least stopped in Pennsylvania, gave police there a couple of years ago a Jersey address, why he came here from Tampa, why he went to from Uzbekistan to Tampa initially. You know, all that is something police are right now looking into.
Okay. All right. Aaron Katursky, ABC News in New York. Thank you very much, Aaron.
Thanks,
appreciate
Aaron.
It.
All right, guys.
All right. Yolanda Powder-Medics got the WGN traffic trouble spots. Coming up, Congressman Adam Kinzinger is going to join us. Obviously, we'll talk about the terror attack in New York City today that cost the lives of 8 innocent Americans, injured another 11 in a another one of those kinds of truck incidents where a person drove a now identified as a 29-year-old, by the way, 29-year-old of Uzbeki nationality, but
right.
living in the United States, a number of different places in the United States, Tampa, Florida, some contact in Pennsylvania, New Jersey as well. And he is a was shot by police after leaving the rented pickup truck, which was mowing people down on a bike path on the Lower West Side of Manhattan.
Then crashed into a school bus, injured 4 people, 2 adults, 2 children in that. And then got out of his car, started brandishing these fake weapons, and was shot in the stomach by the police officer. So he survived, and I'm sure they'll be questioning him. He's under supervision of the police at the hospital as we speak.
Right. It was a pellet gun and a paint gun, paintball gun, that he pulled out as he was running around the streets. I mean, there's video of him, which is is just amazing now, the network of cameras that, you know, almost any scene is going to have a lot of video associated with it as people are pulling out their cell phones as this guy was running around the streets of New York as he drove, as Aaron Katursky just told us, almost a mile. He entered this bike path at Houston Street in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then drove straight south down the bike path along the Hudson River down to Chambers Street, which is 1/8 of a mile, and pops back out where he hits the school bus.
Yeah.
Gets out on foot, and you see him running in and out of traffic for a few minutes, or well, at least a number of seconds, about a minute, as he's running in and out of traffic. A police officer confronts him at that point. Within the minute, he presents these 2 weapons, holds them out, and then is dropped by the police officer. Now, he has survived his injuries, and he is in a hospital in New York. And ISIS has not yet, we're told, not yet taken responsibility for it. However, the president has tweeted a reference to ISIS just a few minutes ago,
right.
saying...
Yeah, he said that we must not allow ISIS to return or enter our country after defeating them in the Middle East.
All
enough.
Right. All right. Well, we'll see what all of that means. I mean, that's a lot of more detail to emerge on this. Who is this guy? Where did he come from? Again, identified as a 29-year-old, but not of, from Uzbekistan, which Uzbekistan is a, it's in Central Asia. It's a former Soviet republic. Now it's its own republic. It stands on its own.
Right. Well, you think of the density, as you were pointing out, of people in New York covering that amount of space that he drove this truck into the crowds and up that bike path and then into a school bus before he being shot. And you think about the ground he covered and how many people, you know, it's remarkable. And then that one officer was standing by so close and was able to spring into action and literally take this guy down before he could do any more damage. And I think that's one of the heroes in this whole thing.
Right.
He is definitely one of them.
Right. No question about it. And you just
have no
idea. And again, that police officer responding doesn't know what he's looking at. He sees a guy brandishing these 2 weapons. Obviously, on his radio, he's heard we can presume that he has heard this incident. He now knows he's dealing with a guy who's on foot away from that vehicle. So it's hard to tell, but he's, you know, got what appear to be 2 guns in his hand. And the police officer thinks quickly, fires his weapon, striking him twice in the torso. And then they take him to a hospital. Hopefully they'll be able to get more detail on this.
yeah.
As the evening continues.
It's interesting. Saifullo Saipov is his name, and as you said, Uzbekistan is where he's from, residence in Tampa. He checked in from a Google Groups in to a Russian restaurant in the New York area, but really doesn't have much of a social media imprint that I can find and that others in the media are looking for as well. It seems that he wasn't that active. And again, nobody from ISIS or any active terror groups has so far claimed responsibility for this.
Right. And the government would know that probably by now. I wonder if the president had been briefed on that. That's
what you wonder when he tweets about it.
Right. You're just not sure why he is mentioning ISIS in this unless he's just trying to. I mean, it is an interesting moment of him taking credit for defeating ISIS in the Middle East. He says in the Middle East. I think that obviously he's trying to make a reference to the defeat of ISIS from Raqqa in Syria. And that we know for sure. And as a matter of fact, in two separate places, one in Syria, one in Iraq, that ISIS has been pushed out of, which is good because that ends their caliphate and makes them far less effective than they have been. And it makes them less attractive to true believers because there's a belief that they represent true Islam to the followers of this kind of this version of Islam that this I would say perversion of Islam that the caliphate would indicate if it continues to be successful and take more land and expand from its capital. Then it becomes, it draws more people in to take part in it. If it's defeated, it's considered to be failed and therefore not legitimate.
Right. And we should say that even though no known terror group has taken responsibility, they are still treating this as a terror incident. They believe it is an act of terror, and FBI has taken the lead in the investigation because of that. So they're still going to be searching, no doubt, into his background to see what ties, if any, he has.
All right, so we'll have more details on that. And then coming up in the 6 o'clock hours, I mentioned Congressman Kinzinger is going to join us. He'll tell us what he knows about this. And also, there is news coming out of Washington about the tax reform package. And the news is that the highest tax rate, the 39.6% tax rate, will stay in effect for high-income earners. We'll see how that plays. The Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 WGN. All right.
Yes, what a day. A
lot going on in the world, and Congressman Adam Kinzinger is joining us, and thank you so much for doing it. First of all, let's talk a little bit about New York City and what at least you have been told that you can talk about here in terms of maybe not much more than what has been in the press. But we do know that, as we've just been reporting, there are 8 dead and 11 others injured in this what is now being described as a terror attack. And the Lower West Side of New York City earlier this afternoon, guy with a rented truck mowing down bicyclists and pedestrians and then being shot by police. He survived, however, and is in a hospital. Can you add anything else to that story, Congressman?
No, I don't know much more than what you're saying. You know, this is kind of the new normal, which is this, this idea of the truck bombs, driving vehicles into mass amounts of people. And, it's actually kind of ironic or interesting. I had lunch today with the president, and there were about 6 of us, and we were talking mainly about his trip to Asia. But we did talk a little about ISIS, and he said, look, as ISIS is basically in its death knell in the Middle East, we are expecting, this is kind of the situation with Niger and everywhere else, we're expecting that they're going to be trying to reconstitute themselves by, these outlandish, these big attacks to try to get information, or not information, but try to get, folks to join them, to recruit. And it was ironic because that was about 2 hours before this happened. And
the president did tweet about that, actually did make reference to that in a tweet just within the last hour, that now that we're defeating ISIS in the Middle East, we got to stop it here. I'm paraphrasing what he was saying.
It's basically true. And let me say this: this is the reason fighting them over there is so essential. Look, we've got what this guy did, and they're calling it a lone wolf attack, and it probably was, but lone wolf just simply means he was acting alone, not that he wasn't inspired. The folks that were fighting overseas, whether it's in Afghanistan, in Iraq, Syria, or Niger or elsewhere, they would do that here, but for that, they're engaging us, in essence, over there against, tough men and women that know how to do this. And
those are people who are from other parts of the world, too. These are not, in Syria, in Raqqa, those were not just all Syrians or Iraqis that were fighting there. I mean, those were people from all over the world who were coming to fight with them.
That's right. That's right. And without sounding kind of crass on this, the advantages to, instead of them basically getting motivated and inspired to come to the United States or to go to Europe, they're saying, oh, we have an opportunity to fight America or the West on the battlefield. Well, they find themselves facing then, some pretty fierce weaponry and getting crushed in that process. But, the other thing is the defeat of the caliphate is so important, because while we're going to see attacks like this, this isn't the last one probably, we're going to see attacks like this. It actually does hurt recruiting into the caliphate, because, people were ultimately joining ISIS because they believed this is what was prophesied. They believed that this was what the Quran talked about. Well, now it's basically destroyed, so a lot of their recruiting is going to dry up, because they're going to look at it and say, well, how could this be prophesied if they just got their backside handed to them by the Marine Corps?
But you, Congressman, you haven't heard any connectivity by ISIS claiming responsibility or from this suspect to ISIS at this time? That's not something you've heard?
All we're hearing is inspired by. I don't know any more detail.
He's an Uzbeki. He was born in Uzbekistan, but had lived in Tampa, Florida, and apparently as recently as this week, living in Paterson, New Jersey as well. All right.
Yeah, and Uzbekistan, I mean, all that kind of area of the world is very, a lot of fighters come from there. In fact, when we were in Afghanistan in the opening stages, we were noticing a lot of people that did not look Afghani fighting for the Taliban, and they were coming from that part of the world. This is it's a worldwide jihad, and I think that's where, I've been saying the term, and it's kind of controversial to say it, I think we're in the middle of World War III, and it's not as intense as 1 and 2, but we're fighting, in essence, a ideology all over the world. So by definition, it seems like it's some version of a world war.
Yeah, the interesting phenomenon here, too, is that after the fall of the Soviet Union, those states, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan, places like that, became independent countries. And they had to fight their own internal battles in order to maintain control over their populace, because you did have these uprisings, religious uprisings, cultural uprisings, ethnic cleansing, things like that that are going on. So it's part of the world that it is fairly uncapped, if you will. Hey, let me ask this other piece of information before, or this other story that's developed in the midst of all of this today, which is not getting a whole lot of coverage yet, but will tomorrow would be my guess. The House is going to unveil its tax plan. Was that what you were meeting with the president about?
No, it was actually about his impending trip to Asia. That's what we talked about.
Are you going on that trip, too?
Nope, I'm not going. But he was kind of pitching what he was going to do, and it's actually one of the longest trips by a president, I think, in decades. So.
Yeah, 12 days, right? Total 12 days?
It's going to be long.
Yeah.
We'll still get the tweets, though, we'll be in contact.
Right. Well, actually, maybe not, because in China, you can't you can't get on the Twitter in China, so
not
maybe
easy,
not.
No.
That'll be very interesting.
I'll tell you something funny. The president did go. He says, it's a long trip. It's going to be a lot of work. He goes, I'm giving like 36 speeches. And he goes, they can be 35 great speeches, but if I give a bad one, that'll be all over the news. We were all laughing. Like, yeah, that's true.
Well, that is true.
It's kind of true.
Yeah.
What you say matters.
Yes. Or he gives 35 bad ones, the one good one won't get covered. Let's put it that way.
That's right.
I think a better way of looking at it. All right. But let's talk about this recent development here. It is being reported by the Wall Street Journal that the top tax bracket of 39.6% is not going to be taken off the table tomorrow when the House unveils its tax reform proposal. They're going to keep that in place for people making between $750 and $1 million a year. Obviously, that's a very small percentage. I believe under the 2% of the population.
So they're
does
raising
that.
The threshold on that, aren't they?
Well, they're bringing it to they're raising the threshold to $750,000 from $477,000 or something like that.
So
$470,700. Now, what are we to make of this? Do we know any other details about things that are going to be emerging out of this that might be a surprise that you can share with us right now and make it not a surprise?
Well, I know some some of the details, but I don't know them all. And it's going to be, you know, we're releasing the final product tomorrow. Well, it's not the final product. We'll go through iterations. But
yeah.
Basically, yeah. We've released outlines. This will have some more meat on the bones. And I expect it's going to be debated back and forth. I mean, look, I think the top tax bracket being maintained was a kind of a political issue as much as anything, too, because, you know, Democrats like to say we just give tax breaks to the wealthy. It's kind of an old, tired talking point. But, you know, at the end of the day, this tax code's from 1986. That was before anybody really owned a computer. It was a different millennium, and we need a new tax code into this new millennium and new century. And I'd hate to be on the other side of the aisle defending a stale old tax code, especially when a lot of these Democrats have called for lowering the corporate tax rate. A lot of them, in fact, almost all of them, they just now are going to fight against it.
Well,
so it's going to be interesting.
What you're hearing from the other side of the aisle is that some want to fight this just on the basis of fighting it because it's a Republican idea. But there are others who are saying, yeah, they're interested in some form of tax reform. But there's going to be a lot of pushback here, like from the home builders, for example, who are upset about the idea that the mortgage interest deduction might get cut in this as a piece of tax deduction, which a lot of people depend on, especially when you combine that with the state and local taxes not being deductible, and especially in a place like Illinois. I mean, this is,
yeah.
You saw the Republicans from New York State and now New Jersey backing off of this because they're being impacted by the home builders saying to them, hey, you cannot let that go away. Illinois is a high income tax state. It is a
property tax state,
right? Very high property tax state, and if you take the mortgage deduction off, and you take the interest deduction off, and you take the state and tax deduction off,
you lose a lot.
I mean, people are going to be paying a lot more money.
Yeah, but let's see what actually rolls out tomorrow. I think there's a pretty good compromise that everybody's going to like cut on state and local deductibility to include basically writing off your property taxes, which is the big issue in Illinois. I think you're going to see, you know, a lot of the kind of rumors of what's in it. I think they're working right now on getting those kind of last minute details. Because, look, ultimately, we need to get enough votes to pass. That's going to be a big issue. And,
yeah.
And you know, those are concerns, including home mortgage interest and all this kind of stuff. But let's keep one thing in mind. Most people's rates are going to come down. The other thing, though, and again, I think the state and local tax thing is going to be fixed. But right now, the federal government basically is subsidizing the mismanagement of Illinois. Illinois has ridiculously high property taxes and also a ridiculously huge deficit in debt despite all the huge property taxes. And so all the federal government does by making that deductible is subsidize Illinois' mismanagement. So I think that's going to get fixed, but I also think – you know, Illinois.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of figure
yeah,
out.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that's
a really good talking point, but let's be honest here. The voters of the state of Illinois can't control either of that, really. I mean, the fact is you can vote as much as you want about it, trying to you know, fix mismanagement for Republicans or for Democrats, but Republicans
yeah,
and Democrats.
Mike Madigan's district. That's the key.
Well,
yeah.
Right. I mean, you still have Mike Madigan, but you also, you know, we've had, you know, he had a Republican governor go to prison. We've had, you know, there's enough mismanagement. You had enough
it's
mismanagement.
Illinois, baby.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the thing is, I guess for, you know, for voters, I think, you know, in terms of being tone audible as opposed to tone deaf, you know, the idea, especially in Illinois, that if we're going to get nailed here because we're the deduction of state and local taxes and mortgage interest and all of that, I mean, that is going to be something that is.
I agree, but I say let's wait till it comes out because I think there's going to be compromises.
All right.
Congressman, let me ask you a bigger picture question then.
Yeah.
Some are saying that this is incredibly important for Republicans to get this piece of legislation passed. The president came out today and said, let's House pass this bill by Thanksgiving. Let's get that done. By the end of the year, we're going to have a new tax reform in America. And do you think this is? How important is it for Republicans to get this passed?
I think it's essential. I mean, we failed at the health care, and we've gotten a lot of things passed that aren't getting the attention they should. But I think this is going to be big. And I think, you know, ultimately, again, renewing and refreshing the tax code and bringing it into this millennium isn't a talking point. I think it's something that's going to be good for the economy and really good for our party to put our name onto this. And look, this thing's going to die 5, 10, 20 deaths before it's passed. 1986 tax reform did, too. But I think, you know, look, refreshing this tax code is going to be the right thing. And let's see the details when they come out, and then you're going to see some of those change. And back and forth is how legislating works. But ultimately, I'd rather be on the side of saying we need to bring people a modern tax code than we need to defend 1986's.
And what is your sense of the political reality now on Capitol Hill as it pertains to now in the aftermath of Paul Manafort getting indicted and the admission of guilt by your fellow Illinoisan congressman, I might just point out, George Papadopoulos?
I didn't know he was.
Yeah, from Chicago.
Yeah. Look, it's I've said from the very beginning, I support, you know, the special counsel being able to do his work and get to the bottom of these answers. And, you know, obviously the corruption of Manafort and his compatriot and then this Papadopoulos, you know, that's kind of stuff to have a justice system we need to get answers to. So I don't know where this is going to lead, but ultimately we've got to have answers to what happened. And, you know, I don't think it's going to affect us doing our work out here. But, you know, it seems to be still early in this whole process.
And then finally, now you said you had lunch with the president today. Did he have two cheeseburgers? How many? What did he have? Do you know? What did you have?
He actually had baked chicken, but we did have chocolate cake. But he only ate half of his.
Did everyone get? Did he get the biggest piece of chocolate cake, or how did that work?
He didn't get the biggest piece. He had a regular piece, same size as mine. And I don't eat sugar, but I ate my whole piece of chocolate cake, and he only ate half.
It was that good.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty good chocolate cake.
Well, the congressman does push-ups with one finger. Yeah, it's in that kind of shape.
Right.
He's kind
so
of that.
I just do it with wishing. I wish push-ups and they happen.
Yeah, that's how I do it. Hey, in terms of Asia, let me just ask you about your position on that. Obviously, he's asking for your opinion on this. You're involved in structuring some sort of a plan here. China this week basically started marketing itself to the rest of the world as an economic alternative to the United States, a safe haven in which to invest, a safe haven in which to place your money, the 21st economic, if you will, adversary to the United States. And it is a precarious time for us, right? I mean, this is a moment where the rest of the world is, and let's just face it, is looking at us like, who are you and what are you? What can the United States do coming out of this Asia summit, which is incredibly important, to maintain its place?
Yeah, we talked about this with the president. He seems to get it. We're on a little bit of a different page when it comes to trade. I'm a big believer in trade. But we made the point that, look, if, you know, Australia, even South Korea, our allies, you know, economically, they're going to turn to China because they're going to look at this and say, you know, is the United States not reliable? I think there's going to be a lot of good, positive news economically to come out of this trip. But I also think, when it's all said and done, we reiterated the fact that, you know, look, if you want to negotiate new parts of a trade agreement to make them fairer, that's great. We're all in favor of that. But please don't throw away the ability to have cross-border commerce, because that's actually when we write the global rules for Asia and anywhere in the world, it usually benefits us. And that's why we have the powerful economy we have.
All right. Congressman, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
A lot of information right there. Appreciate it.
It really was.
Thank you. And including the chocolate cake.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. A lot of calories.
All right, go do the push-ups.
Makes me hungry.
Thank you.
Right.
All right, there he goes. Congressman Adam Kinzinger. Coming up right now, Violetta Pidermedic, WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. Celebrate the Cubs, the team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStory.com today. All right, Judy Pilak is standing by. She's got the WGN News. And then on the other side, a story we wanted to get to earlier today, but obviously the headlines coming out of New York City with the what now appears to be a terrorist attack there, costing the lives of 8 innocent people and 11 others seriously injured there by a guy who drove his rental truck up onto a bike path. Judy will have all the details on that coming up, but there was testimony on Capitol Hill today that was fascinating about Facebook, Twitter, how the Russians were able to get in and spread to 126 million followers of Facebook, the same sort of fake news kind of misdirection information that they were putting out there. But what is most fascinating about this is that, according to Facebook, is a drop in the bucket. One witness today said that that 126 million views piece of this, as it's being described, over a series of whatever dozens of paid advertising stories that they had published, would be equivalent to looking for one 30-second commercial in 600 hours of television programming. 0.0004% of the traffic on Facebook in that year. How about that? So we'll find out what all of that means. But first, Judy's News, brought to you by HearingHealthCenter.com. A couple interesting things also happening in the news today that we should talk about. The hearings today on Capitol Hill about social media and their impact on the Russian attempted impact on social media in the 2016 election cycle. Really interesting story came out that there was actually a rally that was organized on Facebook by a group called Black Matters US, and it drew 16,000 people to this rally on November 12th of 2016. Now, this is obviously after the election. It was they sought to capitalize on racial tensions between black and white Americans. It was the Russians that were behind it. It was actually a Russian group. The Black Matters US was not African Americans. It was Russians doing this. There were about 5,000 to 10,000 protesters actually convening at Manhattan's Union Square as a result of it. Didn't realize that they were actually there at the behest of the Russians. How about that?
Classic Russia duping everyone.
Join us in the streets. Stop Trump and his bigoted agenda, said the Facebook page, written by the Russians. divided is the reason we just fell. We must unite despite our difference to stop hate from ruling the land. Again. Russians. How about that? So they sort of whipped up sentiment from the right, and then as soon as they got elected, they're whipping up sentiment from the left. And it's all being done on the social media. Now, we have Ian Scherer with us and from CNET. Now, Ian, this is interesting. I love this piece of testimony today, that there were 126 million views by the way of Russian ads that were basically designed news or fake news stories that brandished the notion of Donald Trump, according to the Facebook testimony on Capitol Hill. But to me, the most fascinating piece of that is that the analysis of it is that that is 0.004% of the traffic on Facebook. It's such a small percentage. It's an equivalence of you have to watch 600 hours of television to see one 30-second commercial is essentially what the impact would be.
Right. And it's a very smart way to try and diminish how impactful this stuff could be. You know, look, these lawyers' jobs when they went on Capitol Hill, to be pretty frank, is to take the heat from Congress and not piss them off further. And so trying to downplay Facebook's importance and the power of an ad on Facebook is a very smart way to do that. Now, what's funny, of course, is that tomorrow, while they're also on Capitol Hill doing the same thing, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg is going to be on a call with investors after announcing their quarterly profits, talking about how powerful an ad on Facebook
is
and how
exactly
much it can change a company. So it's really funny. They have to kind of find a middle ground somehow and walk this very thin tightrope about how powerful they are, yet not too powerful that we could swing an election.
Well, it is interesting because there are no rules, right, in social media. There are.
Well, that's part of the problem. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
And I think as they're getting called up and called to task here on Capitol Hill, there is concern that the government's going to start imposing rules. Now, you know, you go around the world, there are rules on social media, right? I mean, we were just joking with a congressman who's prepping the president to go to his Asia trip. And, you know, so will he be on Twitter in Asia? You can't be on Twitter in China. You can't get access to it. You know, he'll have to go to Air Force One and have them link him to Twitter is basically what he has to do.
Well, and it's funny, actually, in Germany, I think, is the best example. They have laws against hate speech, and they actually find that if you are involved in, and it's a special type of stuff, it's inciting violence, mm-hmm. and it's connected to the old Nazi era issues and whatnot. But if you are found to be involved in that as a social media company, and you get reported about it, but you don't do anything about it, they can be fined tens of millions of dollars per incident. And so there are laws in other countries that these companies, frankly, have tried to fight on some levels, or at least tried to work with the governments to lessen their impact. Because it's incredibly – look, to defend Facebook for a moment, 2 billion people using it every month, you know, more than a billion every day, it is nearly impossible to imagine the scale of what they have to – keep an eye on to make sure that nothing bad happens.
But isn't that why you got these kids from the University of Illinois? Just there's a plug shamelessly for the University of Illinois that write these algorithms that look for that sort of thing?
There are a lot of algorithms out there, and Facebook, by the way, employs its own. But the struggle for these companies oftentimes, and the concern they have, and this is something I've written about on CNET many, many times, is that, you know, Twitter and Facebook especially, they see themselves as this great connector of the world, right? They are bringing a certain form of democracy to everybody no matter where they are. And that's stuff that has allowed the Arab Spring to pop up. It's what made Black Lives Matter possible. It's made, you know, Occupy Wall Street, all of these different social things that went on were possible in a lot of ways because of what social networking has become, and the fact that it's not that it allows dissenting voices to have powerful voice and to be amplified. And so they are concerned on some level. It makes sense that if they come too hard down, if they tweak these algorithms too much to reduce bad speech, that they might accidentally reduce good speech too. And so that's their big concern. And, you know, you can go to a school and you can write an algorithm for a paper, and I'm not diminishing what they've done, but, you know, you can do this in theory, but when it comes to practice, it's incredibly hard. And I respect how hard it is. That doesn't make it okay. And it doesn't make it okay that we've had neo-Nazis flourishing on these sites, that hate campaigns are going nonstop, mm-hmm. and they're ruining some people's lives. And then you've got the Russian influencing and meddling in the election happening right under their noses. None of that is okay.
Do you get the sense, though,
how hard it is?
This is a little bit of whose ox is being gored here, right? So
yes.
Right now, Republicans were the beneficiary of Russian meddling, let's say. I mean, that appears to be the case, and everybody, with the possible exception of the president, sees that and agrees on it. That have studied this, and they're on Capitol Hill looking at it. Now, question is this. Next time around, as this story about Black Matters U.S. proves, just days after the election, the Russians then turn it around and start trying to incite African-Americans to take to the streets.
And I think the point in all of that is actually that I think Capitol Hill is starting to get wise to the fact that the Russians, it seems to be, right, this is just from the analysis that we're reading, it seems to be that the Russians are more interested in causing trouble and in disrupting the political process than actually supporting one group or another, right? And they're being opportunistic about it. And so that is a larger problem that, look, Capitol Hill does not have a good history of understanding technology. And the fact that they're getting wise to this pretty quick is really good news. Now, the problem is that what Facebook, Twitter, and Google are dealing with is that, for example, they're not forced by law right now to disclose where political ads come from when they're run on the site. So I could write a political ad tomorrow that says, you know, all this nasty stuff about whatever, and, you know, against a certain politician, and I would be able to have that hidden about who I was. I wouldn't have to say it. Whereas if you go on TV or radio, you have to say where it came from.
Right.
So there is a threat by Congress to have a law passed that would force this. The companies have already promised that they're going to do it already. Just in the last week, all three of them said that they're going to do it because they're afraid of any regulation that Washington might come down with in response to these types of concerns. And that's what's going on right now.
Right. Because this pendulum is going to swing.
Very hard. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're gonna be forced into it. And it is fascinating how the base instincts, and I know you write about this a lot for CNET. So this is, I mean, to me, this is such a great sociological study of human behavior, because the internet, you know, it first came to first became famous, as the president would say, and got good ratings with sex, as always, right? Any new technology, the first thing people do is they take pictures of their junk and they share it. That's as soon as you can get an opportunity to do that, that's what they do. Then it moves on to hate, right? Love and hate are the two drivers. And the internet is just rife with people who are hateful sometimes and these are people that, you know, would walk by you on the street and, you know, would, you know, help you across the street. But when they get on the internet and they think that they're somehow, you know, distanced from any ramification for their actions, or they believe that they are anonymous, they thrive in this environment. And it's, and, you know, you wonder about with all of the money that is being spent on the internet in terms of advertising dollars and trying to move people, you wonder how much use people are going to have for it if it just becomes ghettoized.
Well, I mean, this is a larger problem that a lot of these companies are facing. And you don't need to look too far to find out how it's playing out in some ways. You look at YouTube. YouTube had this thing called the Abpocalypse, where a number of publications, including the Wall Street Journal, wrote about how there were very controversial people on YouTube, and we're talking neo-Nazis and stuff like that, mm-hmm. having ads attached to their videos and making money from, you know, mainstream companies like Coca-Cola,
Downy,
to support their videos. And they didn't know this, right? Because Google was based on an algorithm and YouTube would just serve up a video. And so these stories scared the bejesus out of corporate America, and they started pulling back a lot of their advertising from YouTube and from Google. We wrote about that. You know, there was just this nonstop controversy for CNET, for YouTube that we wrote about on CNET for like weeks. And then eventually Google started getting hip to it and controlling more where these ads went, making sure that there were safe videos versus not safe videos. They actually wrote an algorithm that they've been using that censors out, like if an advertiser says, I don't want to have any video that has a four-letter word that I put an ad on, they can do that, right? And those types of things. So these are things that are starting to play out already, and it's left some of these people who are, you know, you may agree with them or disagree with them, but, you know, they are losing money because they can't suddenly make money from the views on YouTube. And so I think this is going to happen more and more as we see it on Twitter, as we see it on Facebook. We're going to see these companies start coming down and trying to control the worst aspects of what's on their services. And look, I think that's long overdue. I don't, you know, I'm not saying that I'm one way or another about certain people, but I think that making sure that these places are not encouraging and allowing just nonstop hate to perpetuate is important.
Well,
I think it's valuable.
It will be fascinating to see if and when there will be regulation, because I would predict that there will be regulation at some point, because both Republicans and right now Republicans are like, hey, freedom of speech, until it goes the other way. Right. I mean, we've seen how quickly hypocrisy can raise its ugly head in this. So I have a sense that you're going to start to see at least the enough threat. And I think you're pointing to it right now, Ian. There's enough threat that the social media giants are starting to react proactively, make some changes, take some steps. But eventually there's going to have to be other kinds of guardrails because other people are doing it. And it doesn't necessarily impinge on free speech. I mean, listen, we have it in broadcasting. There are certain things we cannot say and words we cannot say in broadcasting. It's not theory and concept, but that's guarded by advertising. The reason that you don't have, you know, in the main, you don't have on major radio stations Nazi talk shows is because no one would support them with advertising, right? You could do it.
It's good, always worth pointing out that the First Amendment stops at companies. Like, you can have terms of service on as a Twitter or Facebook that says you can't talk about certain things, and that's perfectly fine. The First Amendment protects you from the government coming down and stopping your speech, not from companies doing that.
Exactly.
It's always important to remind people about that. But I think also I want to give credit, and I rarely would, to Congress, because both sides of the aisle seem to be aware of this problem and wanting to act on it. They're not being entirely opportunistic. They always are a little bit with how they're approaching this. They see this as an existential problem, which is why you saw both sides of the aisle beating up on Facebook, Twitter, and Google today, and you're going to see it again tomorrow. I think that they're all very unhappy with how this is playing out. And by the way, this is not the first time tech has been pulled up to Capitol Hill. The last time they were there, Twitter specifically, a few months ago, they were savaged by Senator Mark Warner from Virginia, who said that they clearly did not understand the problem. And so I think that the real question will be, does tech make Congress feel comfortable enough with how they understand this problem and do it enough that both sides don't come together and say, hey, we've got to regulate these people now.
Right. And that, well, the tech is getting dropped into the politics of America, too, right? Because the Republicans are referring to the tech left, right? Sean Hannity screaming about the tech left. And then, you know, and then you got the tech business guys who don't care about the outcome of the, you know, so they're going to have to react. And apparently Zuckerberg's going to run for president. So who knows? Tennessee. All right, Ian, thank you very much, man. You're always great. Thank you. CNET News. He's the editor for the West Coast for CNET. Thanks, Ian.
Cheers.
Violetta's got the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.